Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Tailored Healing TV. This week, I have the privilege of speaking to experts in the data and tech infrastructure world, Rex Lee and Merle Garrison. We're going to have a conversation today about the tech world, what is going on with AI surveillance, walking us through the system of the Electronic Bill of Rights, and talking to them a little bit about their work. This will be a series where we are building on Rex Lee's work. I find it fascinating because the world needs to start waking up to what is happening in our tech world, also with our rights and our data online. And so I believe this is going to be a great series we're going to get into, talking to these two experts about their work. I myself have witnessed some of it on Cyber Talk TV. I've been binging it a little bit and have found some very interesting topics that I am ready to start introducing to more people, and hopefully you all can go listen to a little bit of their conversations as well to enlighten yourself to this world that we are living in the Silicon Valley Matrix. So welcome, Merle and Rex. Thank you so much for being here today.
Good to be here.
Good to be here, Taylor. Thank you for having us on your show.
Of course. So whoever wants to go first, can we talk a little bit about what started Cyber Talk TV for you two?
Well, CyberTalk is a, it was an extension of Money Masters TV program on PBS. And it was founded by Nick Pallavita and Kimberly Calhoun, whom I met on a panel discussion at a conference, IWCE, which is centered on critical infrastructure for wireless. Defense industry, oil, gas, and nuclear, and so forth. And we were on a panel discussion, and at that time, I was just getting in my toe into journalism. This is 2016-17 timeframe, and was writing articles for an industry trade publication called the Wireless Messaging Newsletter. That came out of the paging industry and lasted all the way up until the founder, Brad Dye, who passed away. I credit him as the first one to publish one of my articles on technology. And this stems from 12 years of research on operating system, apps, AI, and all of the technology that we see today, quantum-driven systems and so forth. And that the origins of that, before we get to IBM TV real quickly, that stems from my stint as a senior executive. And I helped, you know, some people say I helped co-found Houdini Soft. I helped launch Houdini Soft, which was founded by Paul Posner and Ivan Knezvik. Paul is the founder of Carnegie Technologies, a company I worked for off and on for over 30 years. And Houdini Soft was credited at one time as being the world's largest legal hacking firm. And it was working there that I discovered all the vulnerabilities in these operating systems, how they could be vulnerable to hacking, either by your local hacker sitting in their mother's basement with Cheeto-stained fingers, or bad actors or state actors from China and Russia as well. But also, what I learned about those operating systems in the early days, and I'm talking about Android, iOS, and Windows, was that they could also be weaponized for surveillance capitalism, which wasn't even in our lexicon at that time, you know. But I just knew that they could take the data, exploit it for money, and they weren't compensating me. I didn't see really the privacy threats and all that came later. I just looked at it more or less, hey, you're taking my data off of a device I paid for, and you're exploiting it. So fast forward back to IWCE and Kimberly. She wanted to know a little bit more after I gave my presentation, a little bit more about my articles. And so I sent her some links. She read them and asked if I could write articles for Money Masters magazine at that time. And then she wanted me to be on Money Masters TV. And then later that evolved from Money Masters TV to IBM TV because they were on PBS, they were interviewing executives from IBM. Well, IBM wanted to get into the online media market. And so they worked out a deal where Money Masters PBS was able to own the licensing, or they were granted the licensing agreements to launch IBM TV. And then the IBM executives and got together with Money Masters, and they wanted to launch a tech show called CyberTalk TV. And that's how CyberTalk TV was born. And so naturally, me and Merle's a fellow technologist that goes back over 30 years in the tech industry. We've known each other for
Can't
almost
even
30
believe
years.
it. Yeah, that's
And
not
that was
right.
it. So there was, and brought in Merle, and we launched IBM. We launched CyberTalk TV on IBM TV. We got to use the IBM logos. It was really cool. It was real flashy. One of the things that Merle and I hated was they made us suit up every time for episodes where we just wanted to kind of dress casually, like we are today. But we had everything was IBM controlled. The name, I hated the name because I didn't want to be boxed into technology alone, but you know, they were the ones giving us the opportunity, and lo and behold, we became the number one program on IBM TV before they shuttered the network, and we had over 2 million views of our technology. And Merle, if you want to expand a little bit on
Well,
that as well.
yeah, I just want to say this, that being in the technology industry, I actually worked for Rex for some time, and we developed a technology. Actually, we sold a technology that was revolutionary at the time. Today, we take it for granted. It's this two-way texting kind of thing that we were doing. We were working in the paging industry, and we came out with this, and it was like, this is the latest, greatest thing, and we were out there doing this. Nobody wanted it. I mean,
This is
we had to like,
1997, by the way. This is
yeah, we,
1997.
I mean, it was like people wanted a root canal more than they wanted this. And it was super expensive, but we believed that this was going to change everything in the world as far as communication goes. Fast forward to today, that technology is such an easy technology compared to what we're doing. But here's the deal is that all of this technology that we have here today has converged into world history. And what we have here is a technology that's based on everything that's really happened over the past few millenniums. And it's all wrapped up into a technology. And I'm a huge history guy. I'm a Christian, and I love to study the Bible and how history and his story go together, as well as current events. And so when CyberTalk TV started, before it started, Rex was telling me all of this information that he was able to uncover. And it scared the living daylights out of me. I got to be honest that when Rex would call me on the phone, I knew he was going to give me another download of information that he had just gotten. And my heart would say, after a while, I had the Pavlov's dog thing where I'd start to sweat. Oh my God, Rex is calling me now. And he'd say, would you want the red pill or the blue pill? And I'm like, okay, I'll take the red pill. And then he would tell me this stuff, and I had nightmares about this stuff, and I did not want to believe it. I tried to stick my head in the sand, but Rex wouldn't leave me alone until I finally realized he is right about everything that he's talking about. So that was right around the time where we had this opportunity with CyberTalk TV, and we started to just talk about the things that we were seeing out here. And it took off like gangbusters. I mean, it was really, really quite a thing we got to see, Rex.
Yeah, it was. And you know, at that time, after writing articles for Brad Dye and Money Masters, publishers were not willing to publish Google, Apple, Microsoft, at that time, Facebook, before they changed their name to Meta. You couldn't talk about these companies in a bad way because they would reach out to publishers and tell them to recant and muscle them. But they couldn't do that in my case because I come out of the tech industry. Houdini Soft was famous for keeping it legal for the consumer to be able to stick a data cable into a device, whether it's a smartphone, tablet, or a PC, and unlock it and reprovision it. While the street term for that is jailbreaking and flashing, we actually industrialized hacking and commercialized it at Houdini Soft. And we were approached by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the same group that represented Edward Snowden in 2009, to write articles against arguments, not articles, but to write arguments against the tech industry and the telecom industry, who were fighting to make it illegal for you to control the products and services that you bought, because the manufacturers at that time were trying to lock you out and say, no, you can't unlock your phone and reprovision it. Well, that's, again, the street term for that is jailbreaking and flashing, or root your device and get rid of all the pre-installed software that's on there and control your equipment. They wanted to make that illegal. And we wrote the arguments in 2009 that the Library of Congress upheld over arguments written by Apple, Google, AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, Sprint at that time. The governing body of wireless, CTIA, was also against this. And our arguments were upheld in the 2009 Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And to this day, it's legal for consumers to be able to unlock your devices. But the difficulty in that today, you can't root them like you used to before and get rid of all the pre-installed software, because they lock the BIOS. So you can't even you can't even audit what's underneath the BIOS. Now, I don't want to get into a lot of technical terms for your audience, but that's what's going on today. And that was the first time I ever saw consumer oppression through technology.
And that's what
So.
it is, Taylor. It's consumer oppression here. I mean, think about it. This is stuff that we pay for. It's our communication, and yet they were trying to use our own liberties and freedoms against us and sell us what we already owned. I mean, like we can't own our number anymore. We can't port this information from one place to another if we're paying for it. And this is really the root of this control mechanism. If you really uncover this whole thing, you'll start to understand that the powers that be want to control every aspect of our liberty and freedom. And as Rex was getting into this, I was starting to realize the much bigger picture of this, which is really rooted in tyranny.
Yeah. So we'll kind of, that kind of brings us all the way up to IBM TV. And then I was speaking at a trade show, and this is very relevant. And we'll let you take the baton after this,
All
Taylor,
right.
because there's so much, too much to digest. It's almost drinking water from a fire hydrant. But in 2019, I was speaking at a trade show, an oil and gas trade show. And through my work at Houdini Soft and working for a defense contractor, Space Data, in 2013, I reversed engineered a Samsung Galaxy Note smartphone that over cybersecurity concerns about using it within the defense industry while working for Space Data. I wanted to see how secure it was. And at the end of that process, I discovered that 18 multinational companies who paid Alphabet, Google, the developers of Android, billions of dollars to gain access to me through uncontrollable pre-installed applications. We used to call this bloatware. Pre-installed software used to be called bloatware, that you couldn't uninstall or control, meaning I was forced into being surveilled by 18 multinational companies, one being from China, Baidu, and it was through what's called SDK piggybacking. And we'll get into the technical aspects of this in later interviews when we break down the architecture. I discovered it in a Samsung Galaxy Note smartphone that was also in a DHS Science and Technology agent's phone that I pulled up on his phone at another conference in Austin that led me to being an advisor for the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Division for the 2017 study on mobile device security. Well, I showed that piggybacking code at this oil and gas conference. I pulled it up on a big screen, and in the audience was a representative from Black Ops Partners, and they're a leading risk aversion firm in Washington, D.C., founded by K.C. Fleming. And up until that point, Black Ops, a lot of people heard that they know about Black Ops. They've heard about these guys are all ex three-letter agency guys in Washington. And they're a leading risk aversion firm for Fortune 500 companies all over the world. And so they talked about it in theory that our phones were infected with Chinese surveillance technology. And I was the first person in the world to discover that. I didn't even know what that code was until Paul Posner, the founder of Carnegie Technologies, told me what the code was. Android dot permission dot Baidu dot location services, and he saw Baidu in there, and he says, "That's the Google of China, Rex. You just discovered Chinese surveillance technology when you reverse engineered this device." And so I showed that in the trade show. Well, that led to this guy coming up to me after the show, and he goes, "I got a guy on the phone. He's one of the most important people in the world. His name is K.C. Fleming. He's a former head of IBM's modern day cybersecurity branch, and he wants to talk to you." So I talked to him, and he says, "Did you just show the smoking gun, the code, to my representative at this trade show?" And I said, "Yeah." So I sent it to him. Short, to make a long story short, he put me in touch with a gentleman, Joshua Phillips, at the Epic Times, and Joshua Phillips wanted to interview me about this find. Which I've actually publicized the find way before this, but we'll get into that because there's some media censorship with CBS News and NBC going on here. Well, Joshua looked at it and interviewed me, and I started talking about firmware, BIOS, in at the bin file level, and he didn't understand it. He said, "Man, my readers will never understand this. We need to write this out in an article that makes sense." So I wrote the article. He told me, "Write the article first and I'll edit it to where our readers can edit it." Well, it had all the names in there: Google, Apple, Samsung, Baidu, and this is way before TikTok and all that. Well, the Epic Times was the first media outlet aside from Mission Critical Communications Magazine, another publication I was writing articles for. What they were not afraid to publish the names once I showed the code, and they published the code in the articles. And it's one of the few times that the Silicon Valley giants went after them to tell them to recant it. But when they read it, it was all technically correct. And it was information I gave to the Department of Homeland Security. And that kind of led to where I finally went public. And a lot of people don't know this, but the Epic Times are second to the New York Times in subscribership. They have over 20 million subscribers worldwide. And multiple media outlets like Epic TV, NTD News, China in Focus, Business Matters, and California Today, they have all those programs. So that was the beginning to be able to go public with this information and not have fear that Silicon Valley was going to come in and sue you and destroy your life. And that led to me and Merle being able to talk freely about this, because even the IBM executives were leery about it at first, but when they realized it was all based on facts, they let us publish the names of the players who are in charge of what I call today an AI algorithmic control system, and it's global.
Well, thank you for that. What an intro. For those of you in the audience who are new, first time listening, and just digested a whirlwind of information, I will say, as a millennial who grew up watching the birth, but not really necessarily the birth, more like the gestation of tech, what Merle and Rex are describing to me sounds like our modern day cyberpunk films. Only they are the architects behind it and understanding how it all works. We're used to seeing hackers on computers typing really fast, glowing holographics everywhere. But to truly get to understand the framework behind the very thing that we've grown up with and are now integrating with at very high levels, they're giving it to us flat out on the screen so we can understand exactly what is going on from the consumerism side as well as the surveillance side. One of the things that I've gotten the privilege to talk with Rex about in the past few weeks is understanding the Electronic Bill of Rights, a project that he has been working on himself to help us kind of go back in time. Now, I'm a bit of a history buff myself, and I've been looking into the times of the French Revolution and the Age of Enlightenment, and we are literally going through this repeat right now. now, which is why this information is so prevalent. So, could you all tell us a little bit about the Electronic Bill of Rights?
Yeah, so the Electronic Bill of Rights, and I want Merle to give his perspective because Merle has a lot to say on this subject matter. Let's go back in time. Let's just go back, 5,000 years. Let's look at it from biblical history, because that's important, because within biblical history, you can see the dawn of what's referred to in the Bible as legalism. And legalism is simply a system that hijacks freedom for control. And if you look at it from the time of Moses and the Exodus out of Egypt, that was what was going on. Pharaoh and his power structure controlled people through Egyptian mythology. They hijacked it. It was probably very an enlightening and freedom-based mythology that was hijacked and used as a form of legalistic control. And the same thing happened even after Exodus. If you get to the Maccabean revolution, a few more thousand years after Moses left Egypt, you saw this again, legalistic controls hijacking Judaism. And then, so you fast forward to Jesus's moment in the temple where he calls out legalism, and it threatens the Herodian system of control, along with the Pharisees, Sadducees, and the Roman Empire. That became a threat, and that was the foundation for, him being executed and the apostles being martyred. And then you fast forward that through time again. And we see this, and you brought up a great example with the French Revolution. If you get to the 13th century, people see that this silent form of legalistic control infects everything. So if you look at the message of Christianity, which is about inner freedom, and connection with your higher power, if you believe in, if you're a Christian, then you're connecting to your higher power, not through ritual or church or dogma, but you're connecting to God within. That becomes a threat to the legalistic control system. So then you start to see people throughout time being executed over this. Whether it's Christianity, it's the same thing with Islam, it's the same thing with Hinduism, and so forth. You see spiritual leaders like Gandhi through time, who preached this inner spiritual connection with God. Next thing you know, they're executed once they start a movement. And once this system becomes a threat, then there needs to be change. Well, nobody knew what to do about it until you arrive in the 13th century, and then you see the birth of the Magna Carta. That was it. It was like, hey, we need a democratically controlled. We need to fight this legalistic control that's hijacking religion, faith, mythology, and weaponizing. Even atheism is hijacked and weaponized against populations. And so there comes the birth of the Magna Carta. Then you get to 1776, the foundation of the Constitution of the United States is built upon the Magna Carta. But now you see it happening all over again. And throughout time, this is the basis of there were three Reichs up through the Nazi Party that did the same thing: the Holy Roman Empire, the Second Reich, and the Third Reich. It's all the same control system, but it's evolved to today, and it's infected our connected technology. Now that the whole world can connect together through one medium, the internet, they've come in and hijacked the internet, and they're using AI-driven algorithmic control mechanisms to now control us through the technology that we purchase and through the very products that we purchase. So that kind of leads us to today, where you see surveillance capitalism, you see big tech collusion, and government. This is the most dangerous thing ever. We're being oppressed and controlled through the very products that were supposed to free us. The products that Merle and I helped launch in 1997, which, by the way, was a little known device called the interactive pager that became BlackBerry. We did the very first installations of BlackBerry. So Merle and I joke with our kids when our kids say we don't know anything about technology, we were typing and driving before they were born. That's what I tell my daughters. And so that's kind of where we're at from a big picture perspective. But Merle, he can give a more
Let me weigh
detailed,
in and just say this, that
perspective on
history has proven that people don't learn from history. That's what it's proven. And Rex brought up the Bible, and I would say, take a look at the Tower of Babel and what was happening right there. The leader's name was Nimrod, and Nimrod was the person that was leading a political power struggle. He was the one in charge. This was not a religious movement, but what was the tower for in the first place? The tower was to make a name for themselves, and they were also going to be able to access heaven because they were going to build a tower so high that they could then commandeer heaven as well. And so really what we see here is the seeds of a very satanic movement, which is combining the church and state together into one combined organization that has complete control over the people and, in fact, puts them into slavery many times without them even knowing that they're in slavery. It's brilliant for the evil makers, the evil doers. Of course, God saw that and he said, look, these people are of one mind, and if they're of one mind, they can do anything. Is that right that these people could actually commandeer heaven that way? It seems like God is actually saying that. And then you see the same theme throughout the Bible, all the way to the end of what's coming, which is the Revelation. And in that, you can see the exact same thing happening with Antichrist and the false prophet, which after 3.5 years, the Great Tribulation happens. And that's when Antichrist can. Will say he's the political leader at the time, but he will go into the Holy of Holies and call himself God. Rex brought up the Maccabean Rebellion. That's exactly what Antiochus Epiphanes did when he assaulted the temple, went into the temple and announced himself in the Holy of Holies to be God. And this is the exact same thing. He was called an Assyrian, by the way, Antiochus Epiphanes, and the Antichrist is sometimes referred to as an Assyrian within the Bible as well. It's the same DNA. So I just come back to this. History has proven that we don't learn from history. This is interesting too, is that this creative force that we have here on earth comes from God, and yet it gets commandeered by evil. We've had the best technology come out over the last 200 years. We've seen great improvements, so it's not all bad. And therein lies the problem, is that it's always presented to us as this major benefit. This is going to save healthcare. This is going to save this. It's going to save that. But the price is liberty. And we saw that especially during COVID, is that if you wanted to be able to have all these privileges, we'd have to give up a liberty. And people were clamoring to give away their liberty. They were saying out loud on social media, I'd gladly give up liberty and freedom in order to have safety. This is not what God ever said, and this is exactly the conundrum that we find ourselves in.
So you see this real quickly, you see this throughout Judeo-Christian history, but it's not, again, you go back to Hinduism, Buddhism. It's the same thing that
Man's
happened in
religion.
China. Yeah, same thing that happens in China. It's the same thing that happened in India or any other country. And even in countries where maybe Gnostic or atheism prevails, that too is commandeered. So it's not exclusive to one faith, one religion. It's when inner personal faith, whether you believe in God or not, can provide you with liberty that it becomes a threat to the control system of the day. And today, that control system of the day is technology. It's algorithm and quantum driven algorithmic control that we're facing today, and it's being It's being perpetrated by three companies at the top that control access to global internet trade and commerce through the monopolization of the operating system market and the control and monopolization of the development and distribution of AI-infused apps, platforms, social media, AI chatbots, and other AI and quantum systems that are being developed today. And those three companies are Google, Apple, and Microsoft. If you want to gain access to the world today through the internet, you have to go through three on-ramps to the internet: iOS, Android, or Windows. You have no other choice. And they're all supported by predatory surveillance and data mining business practices and technologies rooted in surveillance capitalism. So if you were look if you wanted to name the control system, not AI quantum algorithmic control system, but wanted a name for it, then the best name to describe it and the control system that exists today is surveillance capitalism. And I just wanted to kind of clarify and give some context to where me and Merle just brought you through 5,000 years of history. So there you go.
Well, thank you. And I actually wanted to touch on something Merle spoke on about history and people not realizing that it's repeating, obviously, but it actually takes me back to why this work of the Matrix is so important. Now, the Matrix is a buzzword on the internet these days without really understanding the infrastructure behind it. But I do find it interesting that a lot of people have caught on that the story of Neo or the story of the One is related to Christ-like symbolism. And
Yes.
going back to 2020, when we had the coronavirus, I started studying the etymology of the word, not to simply understand the virus, but what was happening with tech at the time. And I found that corona actually meant crown. And so when we're talking about the ideas of Gnosticism, of spirituality and awakening, it is looking at everything that's happening in plain sight that is hidden, but not so hidden that you're describing. And then, of course, the last human city in the Matrix being called Zion, being the holy city at that. So, seeing this combined with understanding this infrastructure that Rex is laying out right now, finding out that essentially the controllers, these companies that are not telling us how our data is being used, what's being laid out, is essentially the encapsulation of the law, contractual law, light language. Many people have different words for it or different phrases. So, my next question would be going into understanding the framework of how all this is. When we're talking about these three companies, how they're connected into controlling data, your average user who has no clue what's going on, how their rights are being controlled or maybe even hidden through this, how would you describe this to someone who has no experience in tech and has no clue what's going on at all?
Okay, so if you were watching the Matrix for the first time and they're staring into the control system, what do you see? You see all the code dropping down. Well, in the movie they don't explain it because they can't articulate it.
They said it was sushi code.
Yeah, basically. And so but they don't no one knows what it means. So what happened in 2013 when I reverse engineered that Samsung Galaxy Note phone, that's what I was staring into. I was seeing, like, I didn't know the term SDK piggybacking code. I didn't know what that was. So I didn't know what I was looking at. That was one of those green screens. And what that allows a company to do is if you look at the apps today, they're designed as legal malware. So if you, me, and Merle were the greatest hackers in the world, all the features that are in apps today, whether they're AI-driven apps or not, those features are what we would whiteboard out. Control the camera, control the microphone, control the accelerometer. So we can do audio, video, and physical surveillance on the target 24 by 7, 365 days a year. And then the next features would be data mining features. Let's collect their personal information, their business information, their medical information, their legal information, their location information. And then let's collect their sensitive user data, which is literally what hackers want. They want your text messages, your emails, your email attachments, and all these other things. So that right there starts to form what I call, these are the early layers of what is that green code. And then each strand is a layer of surveillance and data mining architecture that forms the much larger layer of control. So how do you control the data mining and the architecture? Well, you do it through algorithms. Algorithms are silent. Nobody knows what they are. It sounds like they were just invented. If people look up the history of algorithms has been around since the dawn of time. They're not new. There were algorithmic developments way before computers. And so that's the control mechanism. It's silent and nobody sees it. They don't know it's there. So thus is the exact metaphor or a good analogy is they're in the goo, in the matrix, living day to day, not realizing that they're slaves to the system because they don't know they're slaves until they're woken up with enlightenment. And that's what happened to me. I literally felt like I was in that goo reading this. Like, where does it come from? Who infected me with this? I love technology. I don't want to know this. Like Merle, I was getting sick to my stomach.
It was
I
too.
was, I was like reading all this code. I didn't know what it was, but I kept at it. And then I built this. I built my own matrix. It was a huge Excel spreadsheet with multiple books in it. And I had to finally, I had to research the code, throw it all up into all of these different sections. And then I had to break each section down and then understand what does this mean? What is this? What's going on here? And another good comparison of this, if you ever saw the movie Close Encounters, when Richard Dreyfuss meets, he first sees the spaceships and they put this vision in his head and he starts to go nuts at his house. And he runs out into the yard. He can't understand why he's building Devil's Tower in Montana, or why he has visions of Devil Tower, but that's where the aliens were going to come to pick up people from Earth and communicate with us. And that vision was in his head to the extent he was breaking, he went out in the yard, he got all this dirt, and he's thrown it in the house, and the wife and kids are running out of the house. That's what was happening with me. I was up in my office going, holy crap. WTF, holy crap, WTF, as I started to understand what that green code was, that it was that it was being actually formulating a system of control that was silent and it was enslaving me, meaning that every time I touched, tapped, or swiped on this device or key logged on it, every single action was labor that was being commandeered by these companies and exploited for profits, meaning that I bought my tool of slavery, I paid for it, and now I'm producing the diamonds, which are in the form of the most valuable commodity on the planet, my information that identifies me, that my information that makes me up. It's called digital DNA. I was looking at how my digital DNA was being taken from this device, my desktop computer, anything connected to the internet by way of Android, iOS, and Windows, and was being exploited. So I was taking my own red pill, kind of like a drug that gives you such a great feeling you run outside and throw it up, like what am I on? But it's so
No,
that's
no, no, wait,
my,
hold on. It was more like you went outside and threw up on me. That's
yeah.
what
And then
was happening.
I was calling Merle because he's a fellow technologist, and I said, Jesus Christ, excuse my French here, but I was like, Merle, oh my God,
Yeah.
I can't believe they did this to technology. And so that's how it all started. It started
Well,
when I was analyzing it and I reverse engineered that phone and I found out that I, through that one device, I was a slave to 18 multinational companies partnered with Alphabet. That included Meta, that included Amazon, that included Baidu, a company from China. And I was their uncompensated information producer or their cyber slave by way of a product and service that cost me money. And so that's how it all began. And once I broke that code down, therein lie one only a few layers of multiple layers of surveillance technology that make up this global surveillance and data mining architecture. It was the OS labor, it was the OS level, the operating system level, The pre-installed apps, the ones I didn't buy or download or control, that I couldn't uninstall from the device, and the platforms that they supported, cloud services platforms and everything, that was the first major layer of the global surveillance architecture that I unearthed. And then I started forcing the red pill down Merle's throat.
Well, let me just inject something here, because at that time Rex was coming to me and making comparisons to the Matrix, and I hadn't even seen the Matrix yet, so I didn't know what the heck he was talking about, this red pill and this blue pill and Neo and Morpheus and all these people. And I'm like, what is going on here? So I think it's really interesting, Taylor, that you looked up Corona and found Crown there. Okay, so this is going back to this whole Nimrod thing, right? Is that the king is going to commandeer our faith and combine those together and use those against us? Because look, if the king decrees something and we don't follow it, then he's going to banish us to hell for eternity. That's a lot of power for one person to have. So when Rex was calling me up and talking to me about Matrix, I looked up the word Matrix because I'm like, well, what is this thing? And I found out that in the Bible, God says about each of us individually, I knew you in the Matrix. The Matrix is in the Bible. The Matrix is the womb. And so a lot of this anti-abortion stuff comes out of that he actually knew us. How can you know something that's just a mass of flesh? He actually knew us. So what womb are we talking about in this particular movie? Well, as we know, this whole society was in the ma they were the ones in the Matrix. And you can see a video of you see in the movie what the Matrix looks like. It looks like a womb that has thousands and hundreds of thousands of seeds that are planted into the wall of the womb, just like you were having twins, except for you're having 10 billion babies. But they stay inside of that matrix, right? Well, think about it. Do you remember when you were in the matrix? I don't. And so there's a totally different reality there that's completely separated from another reality, and it's on the outside world. And if we keep people inside of that matrix, then we control how they think. We control what they eat. We control every aspect of that. And so this is an evil matrix. What did we see with people that were outside of the matrix during the crown moment, Corona? What we saw was that voices that were disagreeing with what the matrix said were instantly flushed from the matrix, never to return again, much like Neo. And so this is, it's the system. It's interesting how Hollywood picked up on this as well. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down in these movies. Rex brought up Close Encounters of the Third Kind. These movies somehow are telling the story about what's really going on as if somebody is in the know and putting those out there ahead of time. I think that's exactly what's going on.
I see a lot of repeating stories, especially when I think of Morpheus, Neo, and Trinity as well, because if we're talking
Trinity.
about Christian ideology, it always goes back to the Father, Son, and Child, or the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. But I also find it interesting when I did a little bit of research into some tech that Sophia, who would be the Greek word for the divine spark, also kind of emulates Neo's story as well. And in Saudi Arabia, they granted citizenship to a feminine robot by the name of Sophia through Hanson Robotics and the OpenCog system. So it's almost this inner knowing that through all of these decisions that are being made that are tracked through algorithms also come from divine inspiration, because all of our thoughts and our ideas are things that are happening during the day that happen with our interactions in the smartphone, then become kind of food for the system that creates a whole nother like deus ex machina kind of feeling for the machine. So
So,
I've seen that.
I want
I
to touch
like,
base on what you just said real quickly.
I do too. So let me go after you, Rex.
Okay.
So you're bringing up a point. You're bringing up whether you go back to 5,000 years, one of the layers of the control system that's relevant today, is a it, it it's an old layer. It's just has been, it moved from analog world to digital world. And it's a layer of control called the knowledge gap. To exploit the knowledge gap, whether it's a knowledge gap applying to religion, politics, philosophy, and so forth, education, that knowledge gap is intentional. And it's been put in as a control mechanism that only so
Yes.
many people before computers and before books, only the people who knew how to read and write were at the top of the food pyramid, so to speak, or the power pyramid. They were at the top. Those who could read, write, and understand language, and that's what they used is that knowledge gap to oppress those who couldn't. And then in a lot of instances through class breaking people down into classes and everything, certain classes were not able or it was illegal for them to learn how to read and write. And then later we saw that same control mechanism when whole colonies of people were enslaved. They weren't able to read or write because they knew that if then people would be able to have enlightenment. And we see that knowledge gap today being exploited by big tech. The knowledge gap is between the developers and the people who are training our AI. The knowledge gap is knowing how to use your computer, knowing how it operates, knowing how the operating system functions. Well, when I first started, I was one of those, although I grew up in the surf community and people like Jeff Spicoli and all those guys from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, those were my buddies. I grew up going to beach parties and everything. I was somewhat of a closet nerd in my bedroom. I had an Atari gaming system. I had my first computer was a Tandy computer with a cassette deck hard drive. And my stepfather was in technology. My father was a cryptographer and my grandfather was a scientist. So that was in my DNA. And so my surfing buddies would come over and see my video games and my computer, like, oh, it's kind of like Matthew Broderick in War Games, like, ooh, what the hell do you have in your bedroom here? And back then, when you bought the computer, you bought the gaming system, you had to read the manual how to operate it so you understood operating it. You were asked to program your own computers back then. So to own a computer, you actually had to know computer code. Not to be some sort of coder, mysterious coder. They make coders like they're mysterious people. You had to learn how to code to program your own damn computer. That was part of it. So people knew how the technology worked. Later on, as it became more intuitive technology, the people developing the technology realized that through by making it easier to use, like point and click, you no longer had to learn DOS, which was the underlying operating system for Windows. Is the DOS operating system. And I can actually control a computer without a mouse. And when people see me do this, they think I'm magical. Like, how are you doing all this stuff without using a mouse? Because I understand the code.
Command line.
I had to. Back when I came up, we didn't get a mouse with our
No, we
computer.
didn't.
There
You had
was
to
no
know
point and
code,
click. You either
right?
learned it or you didn't, or it became a brick in your bedroom and you didn't know how to use it.
Right.
So that's the knowledge gap. As technology became more intuitive, that's where the opportunity lied to be able to then make it so easy that people don't have to understand how to use it. And then suddenly your computer came with a operating system that asked you to click on I agree, which is a contract of adhesion that forces you to participate in surveillance business practices. The legal layer of the matrix now comes in where to use your computer, your phone, your car, you have to click on this agreement that's an exploitive predatory agreement that says we can take 100% of your data and surveil you 24 by 7 and you can't do crap about it. And we're going to take that all the data you produce and go make money with it and go pound sand, and that's what's going on. And it's that knowledge gap that's exploited from throughout history.
Yes,
Throughout
that is.
history, it's the knowledge gap that they utilize against the public. And that's part of these interview process. Let's break that knowledge gap down. Let's break the walls down by educating people how all this stuff operates so that they know what they're using when they tap, swipe, touch, or keystroke on their devices. And Merle.
Let me just say
Well, I mean,
this and just elaborate on what you're saying here. And going back to the movie The Matrix, notice the vehicle that they're traveling in is called the Nebuchadnezzar. This is what we're talking about right now is this technology. What Rex is talking about is that technology is revealing to us the world system that's been in play for thousands of years. What did Nebuchadnezzar do? What is he about? He's a biblical figure. What he did was he was the king of Babylon, and he created a golden image that he forced everybody to worship. If anybody didn't worship this golden image, I suppose the golden image looked like him. I've always assumed that. But again, combining these entities of government and religion together in order to control people. And what we're seeing here in the Nebuchadnezzar is Neo and Morpheus and Trinity, they're all in this ship, and it's symbolizing the world system that's been in place all of this time. But these people have been enlightened, and now they can use the world system in order to overcome the world because of their enlightenment. It's such a picture of what's inside of the Bible, but it pertains to exactly what Rex is talking about here today.
yeah, and it's amazing, you know. If let's go back to 1997 or 98, and let's say we're producers for the movie Matrix, and the Wachowski sisters are sitting in there going over this concept. Well, could you imagine what they were talking about when they were writing it? They were writing this. They're talking about the same thing we are. This is nothing new. That's exactly what I
No.
can imagine. They were going reading through the Bible. I bet you they dug through the Bible and they started to put it all together and say, hey, we see this. We see this in the early internet. They saw it happening in the early internet that people could be controlled by the internet. And that probably inspired them. I'd love to meet them one day and ask them what their inspirations were. But I bet you if you were to, if they were being interviewed by you instead of me and Merle and asked to explain their inspiration for the Matrix, I would bet we're pretty close to how they would explain it. And at that time they didn't, it hadn't evolved into the AI algorithmic quantum driven control system that we see today. They couldn't foresee that yet.
No,
And it's a
no.
lot worse than their vision. What's going on today is a lot worse. And you know, I know we're getting close to the end of the hour, and all this leads to big tech. People ask me, why is it a big deal for tech companies to collude with government? Well, therein lies, it's okay for a company, a private company, to oppress and control their customers because they agree to it through the contract of adhesion. That's the missing link that people don't understand. They click on I agree and they don't understand what they're agreeing to. So this enables governments to say, let's take your algorithmic control system, and by proxy, we can start to eliminate privacy, civil rights, and human rights through the very consumer products that people are buying. And then we can add another layer of surveillance in there, which is the addictive technology layer and the manipulative layer. This is a addictive technology for people who don't understand what it is. It is simply brain hijacking technology. And these are things like variable rewards, social validation feedback loops. And all of this is to drive behavioral data. Once you drive behavioral data, then you can control people by their personal choices and their personal likes and all that. And then that's the first ingredient in the cocktail. The next ingredient is manipulative advertising technology, to where now you can use predictive analytics and data to start to predict somebody's actions and then capitalize on that with a targeted ad. And then the third one is new but old. It was discovered in 1966 by MIT AI researcher Joseph Weizenbaum. They developed the first, a lot of people don't know this, but a chatbot was developed in 1966, through a project between MIT and Stanford. At Stanford University, a psychologist worked with Joseph Weizenbaum, and they created Eliza, the first chatbot. And their vision was to help people with this because people with mental illness were speaking to humans about your mental illness meant it was too uncomfortable at times. So maybe you weren't ever going to get help. So they thought, let's make a chatbot that's a psychologist and not tell the subjects of our research that they're communicating with a automated chatbot and not a real human being. They didn't have voice text to voice technology at our level, but they were sitting at computer screens typing in questions, and Eliza was answering them, and it wasn't another human on the other side. Well, consequently, the subject started to humanize it. They started to humanize the chatbot, and this humanization of technology isn't new either. This goes way back in time when people started to humanize their machines and everything. And once they humanized it, then they realized, golly, if they think this is human and they make it personal, like their friend or their doctor, then I can manipulate that person, and then I can indoctrinate that person with consumer indoctrination, political ideology, or ideological indoctrination. That's when it became horrifying to them that this technology could be utilized to indoctrinate people. So fast forward from 1966 to 1975, Joseph Weizenbaum wrote a book on AI ethics, pointing to the number one ethical violation is to develop an AI assistant or chatbot that people can humanize. And now we see that commercialized, and big tech has thrown out the ethical playbook altogether, and they're making chatbots in the forms of bunny rabbits, and they're marketing it to children, and people are starting to kill themselves over this, like the a lawsuit that was settled in Florida over Google's AI assistant that is humanized. You can create your own character. You can make your own chatbot in its own likeness. And that's the Eliza effect. So when you formulate or you put that into one singular cocktail for control, this layer becomes very dangerous. It's the layer that's been killing children. Without the Eliza effect, it has already led to tech addiction, self-harm, depression, anxiety, suicide, online violence. And now when you take that cocktail and put it all together with the Eliza effect, it's basically brainwashing technology that's more destructive than subliminal advertising technology that was banned in the 21st century. So you put all that into this layer, and then now you have government colluding with tech giants with this power to eliminate our freedoms through this contract of adhesion. And let's see what's going on today in 2026, in
Rex.
2025. We have right now, there were four tech executives that have been they're now military. They were inducted into the military. Shyam Sankar, Chief Technology Officer for Palantir, who's building militarized surveillance data mining architecture globally, driven by algorithms. You have Andrew Bosworth, Chief Technology Officer of Meta, Kevin Whale, Chief Product Officer of OpenAI, Bob McGrew, Thinking Machines Lab. All of these guys are now officers in the US military. And then now what happened, and this just broke yesterday. Former Trump advisor named president of Meta. Her name is Dina Powell McCormick. She was a former national security advisor to President Trump. So now you see this collusion between technology, which was exposed by Elon Musk through the Twitter files and admitted by Mark Zuckerberg on Joe Rogan's show, the CEO and co-founder of Meta, had already admitted that they were colluding with government. And now we see it amplified in 2026. And that's the danger, is this tech and government collusion, because government can say, we're not violating your human rights. We're not trying to take away your civil liberties. Well, the hell they aren't. They're doing it by proxy. And so that leads to a lot more horrifying subject matters that we can discuss in the next episode, such as tech-based hybrid warfare, unrestricted hybrid warfare, that Merle and I are very familiar with, as Merle, like myself, we're on the advisory board for Black Ops Partners, warning the world about this.
I just wanted to add one thing too, Rex, from the spiritual standpoint on this. The Bible prophesies that there will be a coming world leader that will be able to make an image of himself. Sounds like AI to me, and the Eliza effect. Everything that you talked about being able to transfer an ideology to somebody else very convincingly. These images will be all over the world, and they will be the mirror image of this world leader, and the image will have the power to call fire down from heaven to destroy anyone that does not capitulate to this image's will. And so this is where all this is leading to, which is why this is such an important conversation today. Go ahead,
And then it
Rex.
leads to what topic? The need for an electronic bill of rights. We need an electronic bill of rights. We need enforceable billable rights. Coincidentally, 250-year anniversary of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. That we enjoy here in the United States, it has to be updated because we're forced to live online. Now, one of the things that scared the hell out of me the most when I started to uncover all this and then look at the control system behind it, you can go back to my articles that I wrote for the Epoch Times. There's, I think, 16 or 17 articles that made up a book that I wrote, but the publisher who reached out to me about the book, said that Amazon and the control system would never allow this book to be published or distributed at all. So I wrote the book out, and then each chapter makes up these articles I wrote for the Epoch Times in 2018 and 19. And in there, I was already concerned about digital discrimination, digital colonialism, and the use of this power to create a master race built on people's profiles, on their data profiles, that you can build a master race for every ethnicity, and the people at the top of the food chain for each ethnicity formulates this global government that's beyond border, culture, language, and law. You know, a lot of people, I get into the discussion of class warfare, that it's the rich against the poor. No, it's not. It's the accountable versus the unaccountable. Those people who are held accountable and those people who are unaccountable. And the unaccountable people can literally go out and kill people, rape, murder, cause wars, and they're never held accountable for their actions. Everybody else is. No matter how rich you are, if you're not in there, you can be destroyed. They can destroy you financially. Well, in the old days, the systems of control would focus that in on genocidal warfare. And to go in and eliminate your competition through ethnicity and ethnic cleansing and genocide. Well, they don't have to do that anymore. We're all forced to live online. And now, financially, we're going to be forced to live online because of digital currency. We've already lost our privacy and our data sovereignty. Now we're going to lose our financial sovereignty. And with a single button, I can assassinate somebody without physically killing them. I can deplatform them financially, and I can deplatform them from the Silicon Valley matrix we call the World Wide Web, and marginalize them and visibility filter them, or out and out deplatform them. And I think all three of us have had, I know you have, Taylor, on TikTok, I on LinkedIn, and what used to be Twitter, I mean, X, what used to be Twitter, I've been deplatformed on those social media platforms several times. And that's how they do it. Once you become a threat, then they can marginalize you, visibility filter you, and then digitally assassinate you through deplatforming. And now, back then, they could deplatform me, big deal. I still have my bank account intact. I still have access to my finances. And now, with a single button, they'll be able to eliminate that. And then, next thing you know, you're walking down the street pushing a shopping cart yelling and screaming at society. You know, that's what we're seeing today, and that's the threat.
Well, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up today's episode, but I do have one final image I want to show you guys. Since this is all about hacking the Silicon Valley Matrix, there was a particular scene where Morpheus is taking Neo into the Matrix and he's showing him basically the back rooms, what this is all about. And so there was one image I wanted to show you all to see just maybe two or three words you could give on what you think of this particular scene. So I'm gonna share the image. And let me know if you can see it.
Yes.
Okay, and the scene is where Morpheus says, "We marveled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI." And this was in 1999. So, any two or three words that you can think of, or maybe a sentence that will summarize how you feel about this, knowing that what you started, this has now evolved since 1999 into 2026.
I'll let Merle take this one first
Ah.
because
I
what
didn't.
we
It was
started.
Rex's fault. This was Rex. He did this. Not. No. I think this is actually, the fact that he's that was that the actual line that they gave birth. What is that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of blown away by that, and I just have to say this: that this is destiny. There's the world system that we're dealing with today was prophesied a long time ago. There's no surprises right here. One thing we know, even though there is a destiny that the Bible has, that we can delay these things and that we're supposed to occupy while we're here. So that means that when we see evil, we have to fight against it. And I've dedicated my life against for that. This is why we're doing this, is that we love goodness, we love our family, we love our country, we love our neighbors, and we want to protect that. And technology doesn't have to, technology in itself is not evil. It's how it's being used. All of these things can be used for good. And that's how we got started down this trail, is that we found a technology that could help. And truly, we haven't talked about all the helpful things that technology has done today, but that's where I stand on it.
So, an interesting thing happened in 1997 that's relevant to what Morpheus is saying here. And oh, by the way, I connected with Taylor on a UK panel for AI several months ago, and she referred to herself as the architect. I meant the oracle. She had referred herself as the oracle, and then in my mind, I was thinking, am I Morpheus or the architect? But because I've helped develop apps and platforms, we went beyond Houdini Soft. We developed fintech platforms, mobile wallets, and we were putting in all this surveillance technology and embedding them into our own apps, and it was making me sick at that time. But that's another story. But what's relevant here is the origin of the birth of AI. I think it really happened in 1997 with the development of the first interactive pager that Merle and I were exposed to and asked to market to the world. And that was that interactive pager became the BlackBerry. And then back then we could see the power of it. We could see the power of texting. We could see the future of it. We were actually able to, we back then we were doing the first integrations of email. And we were integrating Lotus Notes. We're aging ourselves. Lotus
Lotus
Notes.
Notes.
Nobody knows what that is, but that was like Microsoft Exchange email. And we were doing all these back office integrations. And then also that evolved into Remedy, Help Desk, SAP and Siebel integrations. And we could see the power of it. But one of the technologies that they had was the ability to send a text to a server. You could send a little bit of information and it would query the server and bring back the information to your device. And that was the first what I saw as modern day AI, the ability to train a server to be able to give it a command and deliver it back to you wirelessly over a device much like this. And we were able to do stuff like that. We were thinking of ways to cheat the system back then. We were like, God, you could have this server and then train the server by dumping in all these college textbooks. And if you needed an answer on your test, you could sit in your classroom and text the server, and it would give you the answer to the test without having to cheat. We were already seeing the origins of that. So 2 years before the Matrix, to me, what Morpheus is saying, we gave birth to it. That, if I were to look at an inflection point in time, is when the ability to train computers went mobile. The ability to get information from computers went mobile. And that was in 1997 with the first Mobitex system, which was actually developed way before 1997. It was utilized by FedEx and the US Post Office with these tablets that were getting information, but it went commercial in 1997 and became available to the public. And that was the beginning and the birth of what we saw machine, the capabilities of machine learning and training that would evolve into large language model training for AI. This is 2 years before NVIDIA's GPU chip changed the world and the internet. We were already foreseeing that in 1997, and that I would credit that point in time
That's a good
by
point.
research in motion that it finally was commercialized and could go to the masses. And we saw it go to the masses in a way I never could have imagined. Back then, communications at that level were strictly business to business. It was only businesses could afford it. Like Merle said earlier on, it was too expensive for the consumer. But once it evolved from the interactive
Critical
pager to
mass. Yeah.
BlackBerry, it became CrackBerry, and that evolved into Android, iOS, and what we see with Windows 8, 10, and 11 today. And that to
Man.
me is the birth point in the 90s, 2 years before the Matrix. That's where I look at that inflection point that Morpheus was looking at.
It was CrackBerry. That's the
And
inflection
Merle
point.
always tells me this, Rex, we launched this scourge onto the world. We helped do it. But here
did.
we're trying to educate people. We want this to be educational. I don't want people to be fear this. I want them to look at it as a way to fill that knowledge gap that's being exploited by those in power.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I'm looking forward to the next episode and continuing the education and this kind of fun deep dive through the rabbit holes that we are hacking the Silicon Valley Matrix. So thank you, Merle, for your time and Rex as well.
You
As
got
always,
it.
this has been an episode of Tailored Healing TV, and we'll talk to you all next time.
All right.